This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The sounds of Beethoven are ringing through Detroit's Orchestra Hall. Starting tonight and running through the weekend, the Detroit Symphony Orchestra tops off its Beethoven Festival in magnificent style with Beethoven's Symphony No. 9 in D minor. These performances are the culmination of 3 weekends' worth of Beethoven, with music director Leonard Slatkin leading the DSO through all 9 of Beethoven's symphonies. In fact, it's worth noting it's been 36 years since the DSO served up all 9 symphonies in one complete serving, if you will. Maestro Leonard Slatkin joins us now. Maestro, welcome to Stateside.
Good to talk to you.
Well, as we speak, the concerts for the Saturday and Sunday are all sold out, and there's really only a few tickets remaining for the Thursday and Friday concerts. And I got to wondering, what do you think it is about the music that was premiered in Vienna in 1824 that speaks so clearly and strongly to audiences in Detroit in 2013?
The music of Beethoven has never, ever gone out of favor or fashion with any audience. It is the music that we measure all other music by. And the Ninth Symphony in particular is that game-changing piece, very much like the same composer's Third Symphony, which moved us away from the classical structures of composers like Haydn and Mozart into a whole early Romantic feel, music of Schumann, early Brahms, etc. Well, the Ninth Symphony of Beethoven moves us away even from Beethoven's own high standards, and he brings us into a world of the symphony almost twice as long as any that had been written before. This one incorporates a great finale with chorus and 4 soloists, something that had not been done before. There are matters of structure and form that are all new. Beethoven knew that he had to write something big and spectacular. It's as if he knew this would be his last completed symphony. And it speaks particularly to humanity. It has a message. Most symphonies are just symphonies. Mm-hmm. The message is purely in the music. But because this has words, it's another matter. And these words, the ones that do resonate with everyone in the world now, have to do with creating consonance in a world of dissonance. What that means is, musically, the last movement begins with this incredible crunch of sound, something you don't really associate with music almost 200 years old. And then eventually, the singer comes in and tells us, stop. Let's not have this noise anymore. Why such furiousness over this? We need brotherhood. We need humanity. That's what's needed at this time. And that's what this piece is about. It's a search for 3 movements about what is life? What does it mean? And in the last movement, Beethoven's conclusion is that it must be about people living together.
And isn't that a message that we need right now?
We've needed it, well,
always,
forever.
And the fact that Beethoven wrote the Ninth when he was profoundly deaf, what does that say to you as you explore the Ninth? What does that say about the kind of man he was?
Beethoven wrote a letter to his brothers upon realizing that he would go deaf. And this was about the time of the Second Symphony, so quite a few years before the Ninth. And in it, he contemplated even suicide. But he also said, perhaps a little egotistically, that he knew he had a role to play for the future and that he had to continue. So we admire his bravery, overcoming for a musician, which must be the most horrible thought of all, losing the one sense you need. And yet, Beethoven produces this incredible body of masterpiece after masterpiece. And it's possible to think that he did this because he was not encumbered by listening to the world on the outside, whether it was social, cultural, musical, whatever. He could simply create from within without dealing with whatever happened on the outside.
Maestro, is it true that when the Ninth was premiered in Vienna in 1824, that the musicians, they had another musical conductor and they were told, ignore Beethoven? Is that true?
That is exactly true. There was a man who was positioned beside Beethoven, leading the performance. Beethoven was waving his stick, and we know that at the very end, when the symphony was over, the orchestra finished, but Beethoven was still conducting. He didn't know where they were. And the mezzo-soprano soloist had to tap him on the shoulder, have him stop conducting, and turn him around so he could witness the huge ovation he was being given. It's a very sad but a very moving story.
We're speaking with Maestro Leonard Slatkin, who is wrapping up the Beethoven Festival with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra this weekend with Beethoven's Symphony No. 9 in D minor. Maestro Slatkin, you came to the DSO in that 2008-2009 season, and you have certainly seen the symphony through very challenging times, seen this city of Detroit in challenging times. You even took a salary reduction to help ease some of the financial crunch. What is it about Detroit and the DSO that brought you here and is keeping you here?
What brought me here are first and foremost the musicians of the orchestra. Second, the incredible orchestra hall. This is one of the most magnificent visual and acoustic structures in the world. And third, as I became more familiar with Detroit, I absolutely fell in love with the spirit of the people in this city. I felt that if any city can come back from adversity, and I'd been in St. Louis when it had really pretty much been written off as well, I saw a city bounce back. But here in Detroit, I saw more than that. I saw a determination to grow, to move ahead, but also to hang on to the traditions. The fact that you have people in this city who move, whether it's a Dan Gilbert with Quinken Loans, whether it's Kid Rock, whoever it happens to be, you have people who so much believe in this city and what it can be and what it should mean, that this is inspiring. It causes me to want to work even harder to make the Detroit Symphony part of, if not one of the main focuses, of the growth.
I have to share a story with you, Maestro, about Orchestra Hall, which, as you know, sat pretty ignored for many decades while the Symphony Orchestra played at Ford Auditorium. And when I was in high school, that's when the move became active to let's restore Orchestra Hall. And I was one of a squad of volunteers in, it was 1970 or 71, who came down and we spread sheets over every chair in order for the symphony to come play, because it was so still pretty decrepit and tired inside. But they wanted to be able to let people sit and enjoy and appreciate the acoustics. And there was such a squad of us that came out to kind of help save Orchestra Hall. And then here you are, here we are in 2013, and you're talking about what an outstanding house it is.
It's true. That group headed by Sam Frankel did something even more astounding than what Isaac Stern did for Carnegie Hall. They made sure that Orchestra Hall not only would be preserved, but it would be restored to a point where its magnificence, its splendor, its acoustics, everything would be a destination. And I know that every soloist that comes to play with us, every conductor, and everybody who comes to join the orchestra, they come away from here going, we have to return. We have to be part of this. They love the orchestra for the players. Hopefully they love the conductor or two, and not so often, but once in a while it's a nice idea. But mostly they come away from the feeling of totality of music making. They're able to do what they want to do on that stage. And you can't say that in a lot of places.
How, based on your huge experience conducting orchestras around the world, how would you describe for us the sound or the personality of the Detroit Symphony Orchestra?
Well, fortunately, I'm hearing more and more from people who hear us for the first time, and we've had many first-timers come over the last couple of weeks. They come back, and the first thing they go is, what an orchestra, that string section, what a sound. So I think that, first of all, what differentiates an orchestra from any other musical institution are its strings. If we were just winds and percussion, we're a band.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with being a band. There are great bands in the world. But being an orchestra requires that the string section be paramount. They play in virtually every piece we do. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that we have a brilliant set of wind and percussion soloists, people who could stand in front of the orchestra as well as being part of the orchestral fabric. Not only do they do such a great job as soloists, but they know how to play into the fabric of the string sound itself. So there's an organic sound to this orchestra. I wouldn't say we're flashy in the way some American orchestras are. Mm-hmm. We can do that when we need to.
Mm-hmm.
But more important to us is this feeling of a unified, rich sonority that we can produce due to Orchestra Hall.
You wrote a book, Conducting Business, Unveiling the Mystery Behind the Maestro, which kind of draws the curtains a little on what it is like to be a conductor. And you were actually a composition major, weren't you?
I was for a while. I've bounced around from one thing to the other. I do think anybody who's in music, in particular conductors, need to take some time to write music, because in order to understand the ease or the struggle that composers have gone through to create what we're ultimately going to perform, It's helpful for us to understand that process. Of course, everybody does it in a different way, and I still do some writing occasionally. I'm married to a composer, so I know what that creativity part is about. But for us, we're mostly recreators. We're doing what somebody else has written. We have to decide what's the spirit of that music, how can we use our own creative parts, though, to perhaps get under the skin of what the composer was writing. What were they thinking? What were they feeling? Very important.
Can I take you back to your 1966 debut with the New York Youth Symphony? What were you, about 22?
23.
23. What do you remember about stepping up there for that first time for your debut? How did that feel?
Well, it was in Carnegie Hall, not exactly the smallest place to make a debut.
No.
And all the years prior, where I'd been going to concerts, sitting in the hall and watching all those incredible musicians going in and out, I thought, well, this is a lovely hall. It's a pleasure. It's an honor to listen to music. And then when I saw it for the first time from the stage, standing on it, I realized, I didn't realize this place seats about 10,000 people. It looked so big and so cavernous. And all of a sudden, the shadow of all those giants who'd been on the stage became overwhelming. What was I doing there? What did I belong? Of course, then people reminded me about other folks who perhaps were not so gigantic, and it came into balance. By the time I finished the concert, I felt very comfortable in that hall, but it was a little disconcerting. I didn't get nervous. I just got anxious.
It was probably quite the reality check.
Very much so, and it's that way every time. I don't really get what people do call nervous. My dad told me when I was young, he said, you know, if you get nervous, it's because you're not prepared. You don't know what you're doing, in which case you shouldn't be out there anywhere. So the idea is that you go into performance confident of what you're going to do, and the only feeling you should have is of anticipation and excitement.
As you conduct works by different composers, and I know we've been talking about Beethoven now because of the festival, do you feel yourself kind of locking in, I hate to use the term because it comes from Star Trek, but kind of like a mind meld with the composer?
To some degree, that's the idea, that we contact the spirit of the composer. I mean, literally, we see this from the notes on the page. We don't have words. We have notes, we have circles, and we have lines. That's about it. And those are supposed to tell us what the composer was thinking of, what the intention was. And we must get into the mind of the composer in order to really properly conduct. So the times when I rehearse or when I'm performing, it's more about simply saying, if this composer was alive now, what would they feel about this music? How would it relate to today's audience? How do we keep the spirit of music written 100-200 years ago, but have it relate to our audience today? For example, with Beethoven, here we are playing music set of not quite, or sometimes 200 years old. The music is wonderful, it's great, but should we play it as it was played 200 years ago? Mm-hmm. We can. We can't listen to it that way. Nobody can. Ears that have heard Bach, Bartok, Stravinsky, Debussy, Andrew Lloyd Webber, Jay-Z, whoever it happens to be, that influences how we listen to any other piece of music. So we listen to it with the sensibility of people who've heard music after the time of Beethoven and others. But at the same time, to not understand the spirit, what the composer intended, what they meant, that's detrimental. You must do that first and foremost. You have to answer the question, why did the composer make such and such decision in every bar?
And take it from there. And if you and I were somehow able to talk with each other, let's say 100 years from now, do you believe Beethoven will still be speaking as strongly to audiences then as he did in 1824 and he's doing in 2013?
Leonard Bernstein was asked a question by a student. The question was, who is the greatest living composer? And without hesitation, Bernstein said, Beethoven. That means that his music still has this life and this vitality. The great composers will always be with us. We're not exactly sure 100 years from now what form the listening experience will take. Who could have believed today you could turn on your computer and hear music from all over the world, you could listen to anything you wanted to, so forth and so on. But whatever it is, Beethoven will still be there. And for many, many musicians, he will be at the top of the list.
Maestro Leonard Slatkin, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
My pleasure.
The Detroit Symphony Orchestra's Beethoven Festival wraps up tonight through Sunday with Beethoven's Ninth Symphony in D minor.